welcome to this International Airports Review podcast. In this episode, we recorded on location in the beautiful city of Chiang Mai in Thailand during the Roots Asia Conference. My guest was Aaron McGarvey, Head of Network Strategy and Development at Finnair. Together, we spoke about Finnair's challenges, how route planning has evolved over the past few years, what the airline is looking for when choosing to expand their network, as well as the importance of sustainability. Listen and make sure you subscribe to be notified of all new podcast episodes. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
My first question for you is, how is business?
Business is challenging. So we've fourth year of crisis for Finnair now, so starting into the pandemic, coming out of the pandemic and then hit with the Russian airspace closures. Finnair's strategy traditionally has been the fastest route to Asia, relying a lot on the capability to fly over Russia. So, you know, I say to people, overnight our biggest asset became our biggest liability, and we've been kind of reeling of how to get around that now and trying to figure out how to keep going.
You said it's adding 3 to 4 hours of extra time onto your flight time.
Onto Northeast Asia, yeah, 3 to 4 hours extra.
Yeah,
whether
crazy.
We either need to go via the North Pole or kind of down to Egypt and below and through China. So it's quite extraordinary how increased the block times are. But it's going well. We've just posted our second quarter of positive EBIT. So the demand environment, the yield environment is supporting us now and being able to fly those longer sectors. You know, at times it's 30 to 50% increase in cost. The fuel environment remains incredibly volatile. We go from seeing fuel prices of 1,200 per ton to the next week seeing 800 per ton. So it becomes very hard to, you know, hedge correctly, and it becomes very hard to kind of predict where that goes. And your fuel price very much changes your outlook, given how much volume we're actually flying at the moment. So all the signs are there that things are doing well, and we continue to remain quite positive in that sense of continuing to improve those revenues and driving cost efficiencies through the business as well. So at the moment, positive outlook, but not without its challenges still.
I mean, you touched upon a few challenges just there, but I'm just wondering what other challenges you're foreseeing for this year and maybe next.
I think the biggest challenge we see this year is going to be what happens with China. So, you know, China throughout the pandemic was operating on their 5-1 policy, which essentially said you've got 5 airports, pick one of them and you can operate one flight a week to that. And they held on to that for a good 2.5 years before they allowed us to have an additional frequency into Shanghai. And we were expecting that to kind of be a gradual increase of you can have 3, you can have 4, you can have 5. We weren't expecting, you know, 8th of January, big bang, everyone's welcome. We had hypothesized what would happen if something like that was to go through, but we never really believed that something like that would happen given what we'd seen over the past couple of years. So now we're kind of trying to figure out how we get back into that space. And largely speaking, at the moment, it's a black box. There's no textbook written on how to handle this situation, especially with, I would say, the uneven playing field for Chinese airlines versus the European airlines. The Chinese airlines can still fly over the top of Russia, so they are a lot quicker. We all have to go around, so we are a lot longer. So we can't compete on price. If we do, it's not a sustainable operation. So that kind of, we don't know where that will land, nor have we seen the demand come picking up out of China yet, but we're hoping that it starts coming. So really it's that speed of recovery into China and the capability of facilitating that is our big challenge now.
Yeah.
And the reason that is you know, flying into Asia now most often takes double the amount of aircraft than what we were able to use before. So to produce the same seat count per week, I need 2 aircraft instead of 1. So the aircraft that we had available to fly China and all those routes before are either deployed and we need to find somewhere else to put them, or kind of they're sitting there waiting to go in anticipation of this. So that's kind of the biggest challenge that we face at the moment. And I think really kind of how long can we stay doing what we're doing, given the volatility, you know, if the demand environment changes, this becomes even more challenging for us. So it's a very interesting game that we're playing, and we have to keep kind of optimizing and seeing how things can evaluate and really just deploying the assets the best that we can.
It's a shame, isn't it? So, I mean, as we came out of the pandemic, it was still an uncertain time, and we've swapped it for even more uncertainty and even more volatility.
I mean, we were, you know, beginning of last year, you know, Omicron was hitting. We had just come out of the, I can't remember what the variant before that was called, but we'd come out of that one. Things were looking good. Omicron hit. Mm-hmm. We had a whole heap of, you know, the issue with that was we had a whole heap of crew sickness. So all of a sudden we didn't have people to operate our flights, so we had to cut capacity down purely because of that. And then we started to see things kind of picking up. Forward bookings were coming in. You know, we were sitting there going, we're through, we're through. And then I will remember that week for the rest of my life when the invasion obviously happened, and within the space of 3 days, the airspace had closed. Finnair, we grounded all of our Asia flights straight away, because we had no idea how to get around this. We got Southeast Asia up and running within a day, day and a half, because we could figure out that the routings weren't that badly affected.
Yeah.
And then, you know, credit to the entire Finnair team, we got Tokyo and Incheon back up within a week.
That is
figuring out how we fly, how much it will cost us, can we make this sustainable, can we get the cargo business, what's happening to the cargo business, will they pay the yields, will passengers travel. You know, we had still not seen the recovery in Asia from the pandemic, so we were still on relatively light loads. So how do you do that? And then, you know, how many passengers do you take to allow for the cargo? So, you know, at times we were operating Tokyo with only 20 people on board, so we could carry the cargo underneath.
Yeah.
And then it was a continual learning curve of gradually going, okay, you know, we can do more, we can optimize the route, we can go this way, we can go that way. You know, I remember sitting there going, right, what happens if we put the entire fleet by anchorage to go into Asia that way? So, you know, we got super creative, but that was a very long week.
And I remember as well, during your panel, you said that you nicknamed yourselves the Fish Express.
Honestly, you know, our network planning philosophy has changed from we need to optimize around the passengers to when do fish need to be into Asia.
Yeah.
And, you know, our cargo colleagues, you know, had the time of their life, that they could get what they wanted when they wanted all of a sudden. And, you know, at times we had 3 to 4 flights going to Tokyo a day. No passengers, all fish.
Just fish.
Just fish.
Passengers.
Yes. Yes, it was interesting times,
And, I mean, how have you found rescaling up the workforce, you know, in terms of cabin crew and pilots? Have you seen any issues around that?
I think the whole aviation industry in general is seeing issues there. I mean, our cabin crew, our cockpit pilots, everyone, they remain dedicated to Finnair, and it's, you know, they've worked well with us to help, you know, build up that. And I think they were just all excited to return back to work, largely speaking, after you know, the issues with the pandemic. So we still face challenges. That's you know, globally, that's a problem. But
Were they redeployed within the business, or did they leave the business and they've come back because they really love work?
I mean, we kept as many of them on as we could, because we kept flying a network to the best that we can. And largely speaking, our pilots, at least our wide-body pilots, all remained employed, because the majority of the fleet were flying cargo only throughout the pandemic. And some of those also required cabin crew on board as well. So, you know, there is a natural leakage of people as they find, you know, the aviation industry isn't as kind of solid as it was before in terms of employment prospects. You get that leakage to other places, but we did see a lot of people come back. A lot of people love this industry. No matter what they throw at us, they still love it and they come back. So
I mean, you yourself have been in the industry for quite a long time. You worked for Qantas and also Etihad.
Correct.
Prior to Finnair. So I mean, you've been in the industry before the pandemic, so how has route planning changed since the pandemic, in your opinion?
You know, I think prior to the pandemic, you know, route planning was a very rigid process. It was you had to go through all your checks and balances. You know, every you know, level had to have their sign off before you could do something. I think as a network planner, the pandemic was a little bit of a refresh, because all of that, at least for Finnair, kind of stopped. It was, we were given a creative license to just go, how do we keep this place going? What can we do that's different? And, you know, as a network planner, is there a right? What can we do? And, you know, our Stockholm base was a very good example of doing that. So, you know, under normal times, it wouldn't make sense to set up a wide-body hub anywhere outside of Helsinki. That's outside business operating.
Yeah.
But we had the aircraft, we had the crew. Okay, let's give it a go. So we then based, I think it was up to 3 wide-body aircraft in Stockholm, operating into Thailand and across to the US, and we kept that going for 1.5 years.
Mm.
You know, we've got the partnership that we have with Doha and Qatar. So we're getting creative in how we use our wide bodies and our partners and how we leverage that to kind of make it secure business for us. You know, all the way through to opening like new destinations in northern Norway, which, you know, wouldn't otherwise have worked. So
yeah,
it was a really interesting time to just kind of wipe the slate of a lot of the rigid processes and have the agility and adaptability and the attention of senior management and the trust to just go do what you need to do to keep us going. And I think it's important now that that kind of mentality remains and we don't go back to that very rigid process that can be a large bottleneck in developing routes moving forward.
So it's been a much needed shake-up from the sounds of it.
I think a lot of things came out of the pandemic in a, you know, it was hard, but there was refreshing moments that came out and realised there's different ways of doing this that can still work.
Now, a lot of the airports listening will wonder, what is it that you look for when opening a new route with them? What should they do to try and impress you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be sensible. It needs to be something. They need to understand kind of what our strategy is. They need to have done their research on who we are.
Like a job interview?
Yeah, like have the research, know who we are, know what our target market is, and then come to us saying, this is how we can help you. So, you know, for Finnair, for example, we are an Asian carrier traditionally. We're a little bit more balanced now, but, you know, largely speaking, we still have the bulk of our flying into Asia. So how will you come and help us serve Asia? And or what routes in Asia can we support or develop from? And you need to have a well-documented process and idea around what it is that you can bring us and what we can bring you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point kind of wasting our time of just having a little bit of a chat about a prospect that you haven't really thought too much about, or just filling in meetings to impress bosses. That that doesn't work too well for us. But, you know, I've had a few really good presentations here that were well thought through. They speak to our strategy, they speak to how we can help them and they can help us, and a sense of realism as well to know that it doesn't happen overnight, and that, you know, it takes time, build that relationship, make sure that you're front of mind when we're thinking about things, so that we go, actually, no, I remember this one, they had some good points, how does that work when we start testing changes in our network, or we start looking at new options. You know, that's how you keep front of mind for us.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I mean, it's a two-way street, so why would airports want to work with Finnair? What's your unique selling point?
Again, it comes back to the strategy, right? It's where do we target? Where is our strength? You know, knowing that, you know, for example, Finnair, we're targeting Asia, right? If you are looking to increase your flows to and from Asia or through to APAC region, you know, we're the airline that can help you get there. So, you know, that's what we can bring to you, the strength of our European network, our Asian network. That's what we can bring to you. And I think it's a mutual understanding on both sides to go whether, you know, you tend to know pretty quickly whether this is something that could be a potential or not.
So how many meetings have you had at the Routes Asia conference, and how many do you think will come to fruition?
I think largely this conference was more about that relationship management, especially with a lot of the Japanese and Korean airports who value a lot of that face-to-face meeting, which we haven't been able to do over the past 3 to 4 years, and really making sure that we explain the current situation that we have, why we're in it, and that, you know, you are still an important part of our network. Bear with us. Thank you very much for your help previously, and we appreciate your sustained support. There's been a few kind of prospects coming through, but largely speaking, it's been all about that kind of getting back to face-to-face meetings and making sure those relationships are well established.
Now, you said in your panel that sustainability is now a big part of your conversations with airports. Can you expand on this and what you mean by it?
I mean, I think all airlines now have a very big push towards sustainability, and it becomes ingrained in the conversations that we have internally. It becomes ingrained in the conversations we have with airports. You know, anything through to kind of what kind of SAF fuel availability you have, what aircraft types that you can operate. You know, good examples, you know, London, you know, they distinguish their airport charges based on the efficiency of the aircraft. So that then forces us to consider what we fly to that airport, to, you know, one from an environmental perspective, but also from a cost management perspective as well. And that then forces us to, you know, think about the aircraft we're bringing in and how we invest in future technology. And it also comes down to the route planning side of things. Is this route something that is viable to actually be flown? Is there viable train connections? Is it something we can do from a bus? And we've done that in domestic Finland, where we've kind of reduced flying significantly on some of those shorter sectors, replaced them with buses. And, you know, we continue to look at the multimodal. That's the one I'm looking for, sorry. Day three. Options for transport in Finland, because we have a very good train network. And then how do we do that with other airports to say, okay, well, if there's multiple airports in the same catchment area, why do I kind of increase or double down on the frequencies when, you know, you can get a train just as easily to the airport that we already fly on? And I think that's also important for airports to understand that, you know, if your catchment area has an airport that's already being served or by us or has a large thing, is this something sustainably that we should be doing as an industry?
Yeah, multimodal travel is a big topic for the industry.
It's a very big topic and it's a sensible topic. Mm.
And in terms of sustainable aviation fuels, like, what is Finnair doing in this area?
Yeah, so we've committed to purchasing SAF fuel throughout the next decade. The exact figures I can't remember off the top of my head, but we are committed to this SAF program and really committing ourselves to scientific KPIs around this. Like, what can we actually do? Mm. And, you know, carbon neutral by 2045 is our strategy at this point in time. So, you know, it's an important, development item for us in Finnair, and, you know, the sustainability team is growing each year in terms of their scope of work, their number of people that they have, and you know, how ingrained they are in everyday conversations. So they sit on our commercial leadership team, and they oversee, you know, every decision and every kind of input we have. They're there talking to us and going, have you thought about this? Make sure this has been thought about. So it's really ingrained in the decision-making process.
And are you investing in new newer aircraft that is more sustainable as well?
So that is the aim, eventually. So obviously the financial situation as it is, we need to kind of ensure that we're back to profitability, and we aim to do that by mid-24. So once we can prove that we have a sustainable business model, even without access to Russian airspace, then it's a matter of we can then go and invest in those aircraft type. And what that aircraft type looks like very much depends on where our network ends up and kind of what structure we look at in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're going for the 321 Neos or we're going for, you know, A220 aircraft and the newer generation, it's important to get these guys in that are operating, you know, 20-30% more efficient than it is versus the current fleet. Our wide-body fleet is the most efficient it can be. You know, we've got the new A350s and still relatively young A330s going, so in that sense it's quite good, and we have quite an extensive ATR fleet, which is very fuel efficient, operating on our shorter sectors. So, yeah.
So what's next for your route development? Where do your ambitions lie? Is there anywhere you're currently underserved that you're looking to grow?
We've just got to get back to our capacity in Asia. Largely speaking, you know, we've been quite liberal in, or not liberal, we've been quite ambitious in some of our US moves. So we've started Dallas, we've increased some Los Angeles, we started Seattle. So that's been kind of, the US is well covered in a lot of that ambitions we've done. As I said, we started our Stockholm base as some of the route development items. We've got Doha going now. In Asia, we started Haneda now as the other major port in Tokyo. But now it's just a matter of how do we start getting a lot of that capacity back into Asia to serve the markets where we have such a strong and well-known brand. And that will really be the focus for us moving forward to supplement what we've got there now.
Final question then, what is your business outlook? Like, are you feeling positive for the future? Are you cautiously optimistic?
Optimistic, I'd say. I mean, we remain very committed and determined to making this work. And it's a continuous evaluation and evolution of the network and how do we do things better. And the world is still changing. You know, the political situation is still very unstable. You know, any change in that then changes the strategy again completely. So we remain agile, we remain, you know, adaptable, and we have to remain cautiously optimistic around where we are. And I think the results over the past couple of quarters suggest that we're here to stay. 100 years young and still going strong.
Aaron, that was my final question. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for listening to this International Airport Review podcast. Remember to subscribe to the magazine and follow our podcast channel to be notified every time a new episode is posted. Thank you again, and make sure you come back again soon to listen to our next guest.